Bishlaco, right? So we left a few things open ended. We didn't finish explaining. We dealt with which foods are subject to the Isser Bishlaco, right? Chasher food and not chasher food, right? All that. Now I want to discuss. Maybe we'll go quickly over the rest of the halachas. We discussed what happens if he doesn't have kavanah last week. If it ashes the kelim, we touched on a lot of things, right?
So the question is, in all those things, the hechsher is paskin the way they paskin, and that's why they give a hechsher on certain products.
Right.
So how come they don't release what their shittas are?
If you call them, they'll release it.
They should have, like, we hold this on this.
Everything is documented
the
in OU.
It's not big enough.
In the OU, everything is documented. You can call them up, no problem. They'll tell you exactly their shittas.
Yeah?
Yeah, 100%. And still the star K. So now, let's go on to the next thing. What happens if the guy started cooking, okay, and reached a certain point of cooking, and then the yid came in and took over? Oh, let's start the other way. At what point in the cooking process does the yid have to come in order to make a bishul yisrael? You want to make a bishul yisrael because it's going to be treif otherwise. At what point in the process is there a bishul?
Before it's audible?
Okay.
So treif, it has the halachic status of treif?
Treif min darabanan. Like chicken and meat. Like chicken and milk.
And then the utensils are treif?
That's what we spoke at last week, because machlik is rishonim. We actually are trying to be machmer on it. But if you can't be machmer on it, then whatever. Usually we're machmer on it. Now, I want to just speak out one more thing again. The ishul bishul akum is as much relevant, is as much negeya to a person, individual in their home, as it is in the commercial kashrus industry. So in your house, you have a cleaning lady, you have a babysitter, and she's going to go put up some scrambled eggs for your kids for lunch. You're not only scrambled eggs are treif, also your pot now needs to be kashrus.
Because we hold that
eggs are olal shulchan malachim, and they're not nachal chai.
Are they olal shulchan malachim?
Yeah, eggs, yeah. So therefore, that means eggs are considered a chasher food, and therefore, if a guy makes an egg for you, it's considered bishul akum.
Well, can I ask you why an egg is considered olal shulchan malachim?
What?
Why is an egg considered olal shulchan malachim?
Why?
Are they going to serve an egg at a state dinner?
Are they going to serve egg at a state dinner? It's actually a pretty good question, but I guess it was considered a chashav Michael. I don't know exactly, but it's oil shulchan malachim. That already is a first halacha shulchan aruch. It says beitza avo bisharuyal goy machaya. Even theoretically, you could swallow it raw, but in bishul v'chol masur, because it's not really considered nechal chay. Okay, so if a non-Jew in your home makes an egg for you, okay, and then you have other scenarios. Let's say in a cafeteria, you have a yeshiva. So you want to make eggs for the breakfast, for the bocha. You're going to have a Jewish guy coming in every day. Let's say you have a restaurant. So you have your chefs in the back. Who's taking care to make sure that everything is bishul? Forget the eggs. What about the chicken, the meat, the noodles, the pot, everything?
Well, it's turning the flame on.
Okay, so here's the thing. Right, so here's the famous machlokes between the Ramah and the Mechaber, which is the machlokes between the Sfaradim and the Ashkenazim. That the Sfaradim are very machmer on this. And the Sfaradim say that even though we say by Pas Akum, as long as the Jew is involved in the most minimal level of the cooking, it's called Pas Yisrael, but by Bishul Akum, the Mechaber is more machmer. And the Mechaber says is that the Jew actually has to put the food in the oven. It's not enough for the Jew to turn on the flame and then leave, and then have the guy put the food on, because that doesn't actually start the cooking process. Because you could have a fire on all day, and then when the guy comes to the restaurant and say, can I have some food, what are you going to serve him? You're going to show him the fire and say, see, it was there? The fire doesn't help you if you didn't put the food on. So therefore, according to the Mechaber, it's not Bishul Yisrael until the Yid actually puts the food on the stove or in the oven.
So when donuts come down, you turn on the flame, it's different batches of donuts.
Okay, so here's the things that you have to know. Exactly. This is part of the issue. So now, as opposed to the Ramah says that even if the Yid turned on the fire, Even if he had turned on the fire, that's enough to make it Bishul Yisrael, and it's not Bishul Akum.
Oh, so for Ashkenazi.
Exactly. So here's this common scenario. You have a caterer. The caterer has Mashgiach. Mashgiach comes in, opens the kitchen at 4:35 in the morning for one of these catering halls. He turns on all the ovens and the stoves. Now the fire is good. Now the chefs can come in, put the food on, and everything's Bishul Yisrael. Now that's obviously the much more easy way to go. So you don't have to actually have a Jew in the kitchen the whole entire time. I mean, you have to have a Mashgiach, but you don't have to have the Jew turning on and off and putting the food on the fire. So for Ashkenazim, it's easy. The problem is for Sephardim, it's very complicated. Because everything going on, the Jew has to constantly be the one putting the food on the fire. Okay? So imagine, you have a humongous commercial kitchen, okay, you're a hotel, you're catering for Pesach, you're making 1,000 meals, and then right after you finish the meals, you gotta start making the next meal, okay? So you have one Jew coming in the morning, turns on the fire, good, so now the goyim come in, they make their green beans and their meats and their things or whatever, their soups and everything, gavaldik, fine. But now, for Sephardim, that's not going to cut it. The Jew actually has to be sitting there putting the pot on. Now you finish putting the pot on, take it off. Now he's got to put the next pot on. So it's a tremendous hassle.
What about for Ashkenazim if the goy accidentally turns the flame off?
Right, okay. If the flame accidentally, if let's say the power goes off, then that's an issue. So one of the Mashgichim here was telling us, that they have a special, thing that they can't turn on the stove without the code and whatever, for the Ashkenazim. But for the Sephardim, it's a big problem. So even as recent as when I was in Lakewood Yeshiva, the first couple of years I was in Lakewood Yeshiva, the kitchen was only Bishul Yisrael according to the Ashkenazim. So imagine you're in Lakewood Yeshiva and you're a Sephardi guy. I can't trust the kashrus here, right? So what?
Well, they can't trust it.
No, I'm saying I'm a Sephardi guy, I can't eat there. So in the end, since it started being more Sephardi Shabbachim, so they put up, I remember still, they put up a big sign in Yeshiva, the Baruch Hashem, where we were Masada in the kitchen, that now it's Bishul Yisrael even for Sephardi.
But it's the kash of the kitchen?
You have to ask a Sephardi place.
Did they?
No, I'm saying, I don't know if the Sephardim would require, maybe that much they would rely on the Ramah, that you don't have to kash the Kalim. I hear. So this is a very big issue. Now, it's also a big issue, not just in a commercial setting, but in your house. Let's say you have a cleaning lady, and I know this is true very often. You have a cleaning lady, and the cleaning lady knows she can't turn on the fire. So before you leave, the nanny or whatever, so you'll turn on the stove. And now she can go ahead and make eggs for the kids. But for Sephardim, that wouldn't be enough. Okay? Now, I don't want anyone to assume, by me saying that's a heter to allow your non-Jewish cleaning lady to be home alone and make the food in the kitchen. So I don't think that's a good idea anyway. As we'll see maybe in future shiurim, that having a non-Jew in the house by herself playing around with the kitchen is probably equivalent to making a kitchen tray. But that's beside the point. Now,
we should have a share about that.
Right? We're going to have a share about it.
Why wait?
I didn't say wait, but let's finish this topic. So now, if you notice in the flyer, one of the topics was this is all about non-Jews, food and non-Jews, so here's part of it. Okay, now, so that's the Machlokes Sephardim and Ashkenazim. Obviously, Sephardim can be Mekel, Ashkenazim is a Shaila. Now, fine, good. Now, on to the next thing. So, let's say, at what point in the cooking process does the Jew have to get involved? Okay, let's say the guy, you walk in and the guy started making it. Are you allowed to come in if it was already started the process? Can you quickly take the food off the stove and put it back on? Is that good enough?
We're in the Ramon.
What?
We're in the Ramon?
Whoever it is. Let's say the guy cooked to put up a pot of soup. Okay. Now you coming in and you see that the pot of soup is going, you want to salvage it.
Do something else like add an ingredient to that.
Okay, so alright, you could take it off, put it back on, you could turn off the fire, put that back on. By the way, according to this, fire them would agree. If the food is already on the stove with no flame, and then you turn on the flame, of course that's considered Bishul Yisrael, according to the Sephardim too, because you turn the food, you turn the oven on for the food.
It's the inverse.
It's the inverse of the other case.
You can keep it on the stove all day long if you don't turn it on.
Yeah, exactly. So that for sure works. Okay. So now, what happens if you walk in and you see the okay? So the halacha is if the food was already a third to a half cooked, then you have to be machmir and you can't save the food anymore. Why? Because since it was already cooked enough that it was edible,
Michael Ben
Jussoy. So if it was already cooked, it was already edible. So now the goy, the fact that you came in now is irrelevant. The Maisa, you benefited from the cooking of the goy. But if you came in before Michael Ben Jussoy, you came in before it was a third cook, then you saved the food. Okay? Where is this relevant? So it's very interesting. It could be relevant to know regarding certain foods which are instant foods. Okay? Instant foods, the way they're made is that it's not that, like, if you make certain types of certain potatoes grown in Idaho in certain fields cook quicker. So therefore, it's instant mashed potatoes. The pshat, instant mashed potatoes means is that they really basically cooked them already, and then they dehydrated it and they left you with the flakes. Okay? Well, let's say instant oatmeal. What they do with instant oatmeal is that they cooked it partially, part of the way, so that you can come in and now finish the cooking. So, well, let's say you have instant soups. Right? You have instant noodles. How do you make instant noodles? Like these tradition soups. Right? So you have instant noodles that you all you have to do is add some water and it gets cooked in 2 minutes. How did that happen? Because they already partially cooked it before. Okay? So the shahs with instant food, is it considered when you coming in that whatever they did till now is irrelevant? Or do you say since they did already more than a third of the cooking, and you just have to finish the process?
Is it really
it's
more
too late.
Than a third of the cooking?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's less than a third. It's way more than a third. Because halachically,
it's not edible.
Well, here, halachically speaking, cooking with food, which is less than yad soledes bo, less than a certain degree, is not considered cooking halachically. On Shabbos, let's say you take lukewarm water and you stick something in lukewarm water. It's not called cooking on Shabbos, right? On Shabbos, that's not considered cooking. Cooking has to be with boiling hot water. So these instant soups or oatmeals, the fact of the matter is that you can cook it with lukewarm water. You put lukewarm stuff, it will get edible. So clearly that means it does not require any more cooking, halachically, to consider it ready. So as far as halach is concerned, it was really fully cooked already. So therefore, someone a taina that all these type of things have to be Bishul Yisrael. Now the oatmeals maybe don't, because the oatmeals are not oil shulchan malachim anyway. Raw oats is not oil shulchan malachim. It's like it's not a chasha food. But noodles are. You're not convinced.
Certain noodles are fast.
Right. I would go with the sons of caterer. They're saying that noodles are chashav. That's it. So the
noodles are, but like soup.
There's a little pushing it. Anyone
this is?
So the Lemaisa, I remember with Rabbi Felder, so he said that he held that the tradition soups, since they don't require any formal cooking, you can even use lukewarm water.
Even cold water.
Right. So therefore. Okay, but not really, because it's really the same type of, it's really noodles. Bottom line is it's noodles, and therefore it's oil shalchem malachim. So Rabbi Felder was very upset at one of the hechsherim that gave a hechsher to the tradition soup, because he said it's got to be, it's a bishalakim. So he called up the company, and the company said, "Are you? Of course it's Bishul Yisrael. What's your havim? No, we'd never give a hechsher to this if it wasn't Bishul Yisrael. It's cooked already." So he said, "Why don't you write on the package that it's Bishul Yisrael?" He said, "I have to write it? It's obvious." So anyway, now if you look on the tradition soups, it's Bishul Yisrael. It says that it's Bishul Yisrael. What? It's an added selling point in case someone thinks
so
that they forgot.
The oatmeal, he's not mad about.
The oatmeal is not mad about because it's not oil shulchan malachim. But the soup he held needed it, and lemaisa the kashrus agent say agreed.
The soup is halacha.
Right, and noodles also. The noodles, that's the point. Right. Okay, so instant food. You got, now, he had a whole issue, Rabbi Felder, about the instant mashed potatoes, and here is a very interesting issue. What happens is mashed potatoes are halacha melachim. They take mashed potatoes, okay, they take mashed potatoes, and they dehydrate them. They take out all the moisture until it's very dry, and then they turn them into flakes. And then they resell the flakes as instant mashed potatoes. So all you have to do is pour boiling hot water on it, and you'll be fine. Okay? So the question was, is, since at the time when it was cooked, it was oil shochem lachim, now they dehydrated it. Now the fact is, what you're buying, since it needs a new process, does that take away the bishalakum? And now the Yisrael's making it, because when you got it, it was inedible. It was totally inedible when you got it. So do you say you're benefiting from the cooking of the non-Jew? Or do you say, since you got it in an inedible state, then it's not nogeh the bishalakum anymore, because it was gone. It's not edible anymore. So I don't remember the whole shock of Atari, but I remember Rabbi Felder held that it was a problem. Because since the bishul akum remained, it does not require a new bishul to get it to be edible. So that means the process which took the potato from raw to cooked, that stays, even after the dehydrating process. So the potato went from raw to cooked to mashed, then they dehydrated. All it requires now is lukewarm water to get it back to the texture. So that means when you're getting it back, you're still benefiting from the cooking of the happened before the dehydrating process, and therefore it could be subject to bishul akum. The kashrus organizations do not agree with this. So the OU will give regular Idaho, whatever, instant mashed potatoes a hechsher, an OU, because they hold that since it got dehydrated to the point it's not edible the way it is, so the cooking that happened in the previous state is not nogeh anymore.
Now what do you hold?
What?
What do you hold?
What do I hold? I'm being recorded. I'm not But the OU says it's okay, and I if I remember correctly, Rabbi Felder from Lakewood said it was a problem. What do I hold? If it's easy to get, Bishul Yisrael, I get Bishul Yisrael. There are firm companies that sell instant mashed potatoes
for that same product.
There's instant mashed potatoes made, and it's hard to imagine. And people say, well, the Jewish brands aren't as good. I mean, you're talking about it. You're obviously not too particular about what you're eating if you're eating instant mashed potatoes anyway. Right? So then you're going to tell me this brand, that brand. I mean, give me a break, you know? So you're getting gourmet, you know, stuff over here. So therefore, if I'm not really sure where instant mashed potatoes are used. They're used for like potato conditions and stuff, right?
Instant mashed potatoes?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Some people
use them for cookies.
Right.
What about just for mashed potatoes?
What? Yeah, just for mashed potatoes. Just
mash
them in.
Right.
Use them for
eating
like.
You use it a lot?
Potatoes. I seldom eat potatoes.
Right. I don't think most people like use it on a constant basis. I think that in some caterers, they do use it for like. For like knishes and stuff like that, where you can't really taste the potato so much, so just to make it like feel like there's in the.
I usually use that for like kosher Pesach schnitzel.
You're gonna get all the secrets.
Yeah, this is getting, you know. You gotta watch out. You're not getting in trouble. So right. So this is the.
This is what the mother.
Yeah. So this is an interesting shaila. You hear the two tzedakim, right? You hear the two ways to look at it. So, you know, it's a shaila. It's kedai to bring it up. And, you know, I think most poskim follow the kashrus organizations because, okay.
I mean, in terms of local kashrus, they're always going to rely on the Starkey and the OU. They're not getting into the Lashitas.
No. The local kashrus organizations in general, their shita is that they follow a national kashrus agencies. So they don't have, generally speaking, their own, you know, mahalach and certain things. They follow OU, Starkey, Chafkey, basically. Oh,
would
not Chafkey, Starkey.
They say certain things of OU we don't do, or certain things of Chafkey?
I think that that's because they follow two out of the three. Between the Starkey, the CRC, and the OU. So if there's a machlokes, they'll go with two out of the three, yeah. Of those organizations.
When I was involved with that, they basically, when you were checking for products incoming, you have to have a hechsher. They didn't get into the lumpness of what they told us, alumnus of Pasi and all that, but they didn't.
Right. So now, okay. Now, what's considered? So that's the issue of Michael Ben Drusai and all that. Now, what's the issue? What is considered cooked?
Unless the label says Pasi Yisrael or Bishul Yisrael, the labels, then they have to go by that.
Yeah. Most things don't say Bishul Yisrael because there's no reason to say Bishul Yisrael. If it wasn't Bishul Yisrael, it would be treif. So it's like saying, you know, no milk and meat. Like, well, what's the point? Okay. So now, now, what's considered cooked?
Salmon. Tuna.
Tuna. Okay, so certain things are machlokes. So,
you had to be here last week.
So there's what's considered a cooking process. There's certain ways. There's different ways that you can make. You can prepare food. You can cook it. You can fry it. You can roast it. Right. But then there's other things that don't require heat. Okay, you could smoke something. You can salt it.
Pickle.
You can pickle it. You can cold smoke it. Okay, steam it. Okay, so let's go. Anything which requires heat, cooking, roasting, frying, zavada, if a guy does that on that type of food, is bishlak.
Steaming
is heat. But the poskim seem to think that steaming was not included in the original gzera. But Rabbi Belsky held from the OU that steaming is a problem because it's a common way of cooking nowadays. And therefore, it would be a problem if a guy steamed food. The reason why that's relevant is because practically everything cooked commercially today is cooked with steam. Because it's much more efficient and clean. So if you have canned, how do they cook canned foods? So some things are cooked first and then canned, but most things they put in the can first, raw, and then they steam the whole can. They generally speaking do a lot of steaming because it's a very clean way of cooking. So this would make a major nafkamina. If steaming was not subject to mishlakam, it would resolve a lot of issues. But the mice, so we paskin that steaming is subject to mishlakam. Okay? For the most part. Now, what about cold smoking? The reason smoke is very nagea, it's because lox mosha.
What is cold smoke besides as opposed to smoke?
Smoked is generally cold smoke, yeah. But there's such a thing as hot smoke, there's such a thing as cold smoke. Cooking with smoke, I was just kind of trying to figure out. I was talking to a guy in the community, he's very big into his smoking, his foods. So he was explaining to me the whole series over here. But the point is that smoked foods, the way it cooks it, is that it makes it edible in a way that really all food is edible raw. You can shecht an animal and eat it. Like, what's wrong? You know, eat the meat. What's wrong with raw meat? The problem with raw meat is going to kill your stomach is because there's all this bacteria in there. Okay? So there's all this bacteria in there, and the bacteria is going to settle in your stomach and start spreading, and whatever, that's where you have food poisoning. So people can't eat raw foods because what the smoking does is basically preserve the meat and kill the bacteria. So it doesn't actually turn it from raw to cooked, but it will take the raw thing and make it edible now, as edible as cooked would. But the bottom line is smoked salmon, i.e. lox, is smoked. It's not cooked. Okay? So that's why you can buy any lox, you know, because essentially, it doesn't need Bishul Yisrael, even though salmon is oil shulchan lochem, but it's not cooked. It's smoked. There's no heat involved in the production of salmon, of lox.
It's still raw.
It's salted and it's smoked. That's what it is. So the salt does part of the, you know, preserving. The smoke kills some of the bacteria, and you end up having this thing that's basically raw but is edible. Okay? So smoked foods are all mutter. Even some salami is really smoked and not cooked. Yeah. The real salami, that's why it's dry. That's why you set it up to dry. Because what the dryness does, it takes out any moisture that would be there to allow the bacteria to grow. So what happens is you smoke it like crazy. You salt it like crazy. That's why it's very salty. You salt it, you smoke it, and then you let it dry out, and anything left dries out, and then you just got a piece of raw meat. It's fine to eat.
Really?
Yeah. That's why it won't spoil. because it's overly preserved. It's, it has all these preservatives to keep it the meat, you know, stark. Now that's really what salami is in the generic, you know. But Maisa, nowadays you buy salami, it's not that usually. But in some places they do have that, you know,
the hard
stuff. That's real.
So is that what beef jerky is too?
Yeah, probably.
Just take meat and just let it get dried out.
In the food industry today, someone who's in the food business was telling me that the kosher beef jerky is like the hottest item on the market now in the kosher food industry.
Yeah, love that.
What?
Love
yeah?
I love it.
What is it?
It's delicious.
That's what this is. I'm assuming it's not kosher. I assume it's the same stuff. It is delicious? It sounds like nasty, but what is it?
I saw one guy who was writing how he started his beef jerky business. Said he liked meat and he was going places there was no kosher meat. So he brought some meat with him. He stuck it on the hood of the car while he was driving. And he saw how good it was and he started selling it as beef jerky. So it must have the heat of the sun.
Right, so somehow it's preserved in a way. I don't know about beef jerky, but this is what he was telling me about salami. Okay? So
sounds good.
What?
So we're saying sounds that good. Even if it's olshav malachim, any of the cold cooking processes.
Correct. Salting, smoking, lemoning.
It's not considered official.
Right. Ceviche-ing.
So the guy who turns on the smoker can be a goy.
Right. Right. It's a cold smoking process. Now, a hot smoke is a little bit of a different issue. But even the hot smoke, what they do is that they're just making the smoke, but it's not Yatzel Edesboy. The hot smoke, you put your hand there, it's not Yatzel Edesboy. So, even then, it wouldn't be a problem, okay? Fine.
In the sushi restaurants, they can make ceviche, they can make it all.
Yeah.
Anything cold, you have to watch them for that.
Correct. Okay, now, there was three things I wanted to discuss tonight. See if there's anything I missed before we move on to the next topic. Okay, yeah, here's one important thing. So there's an important psak, alleged psak, from Moshe Feinstein. Okay? And Moshe Feinstein is quoted by, in the tshuva of the Rebbe of Ephraim, by Rebbe Ephraim Greenblatt, and Rebbe Nota, whatever. And Rebbe Moshe is quoted as saying that anything which is cooked in an industrial commercial setting is not subject to bishlach. Now, why is that so? Because he said, how do they cook echves, you know, canned stuff? The way they cook it is that they take, like we said before, they put all the food in the can, and they take the can and run it through an industrial smoker, heater, steamer, okay, and they cook it that way. He says, it's not shayich for any guy in their own house to do that. Right? It's a totally industrial process, which is totally not shayach for an individual person to reproduce in their own home. It's not shayach the gzera of chasnas on that.
That's like saying a new category of Bishop Halter.
Right, but it's not just that he happens to be a palter, but doing the same thing. He's a palter that's doing palter and dick stuff that they could have never made the gzera on because it didn't apply. So Rav Moshe is allegedly, that's why I said alleged, to say that anything which is done in a process which is impossible to repeat in one's own home is not subject to the gzera. Okay? Which, if you were in the commercial kashrus agency business, you would take this to the bank. Because that means Bishul Akum is out. Now imagine, in the kashrus world, Bishul Akum is probably the most complicated thing to get out of. Because you can go to a major plant and say, just show me your ingredients. You don't have to change anything, just keep your process. I'll give you certification, just show me your ingredients. I show me the ingredients, show me the process. I'm not going to bother you. But Rabbi, you know, no, listen, you know, all I have to do is look at the process, look at the food, I'm fine. Okay, good, that's one thing. So then you go to a place and say, by the way, guys, you have to let me do it. What do you mean, let me do it? This stuff, this, we're talking about a plant that's producing, you know, hundreds, tens of thousands of cans a day. You want to come in and, you know, what are you planning on doing? I got to turn on the machines in the morning. I mean, it's much more complicated once you get involved in Bishul Yisrael, right? So, if you could take this from Moshe and say, that's it, everything's nothing subject to Bishlakim, you would be in a great position. The kosher agencies are not soymich on this tshuva. They do use it as a heter together with other things. Like, let's say you have a few sveikas, let's say the tuna.
Is it Negros Moshe who wrote it?
It's not printed in Negros Moshe. That's what I'm saying. But Rabbi Greenblatt says that he spoke to Moshe, and the exact nusach of the whole Shach Vataria is, basically, I have it here. The nusach of the Shach Vataria is, I'll tell you exactly where it comes from. Basically, what happened was is that he says that he was that someone wrote this tshuva with Rav Moshe at the same time, and Rav Moshe dictated to him what to say.
Doesn't that sound like something Rav Moshe would do?
The whole thing is a little weird, and the chiddush is a huge chiddush.
Right.
I can't find the paper now, but I looked up the tshuva from my. It's not like he said, you know, I heard from. It's not so clear cut.
I'm not going against what he said. I just want to understand how.
I'm saying the kashrus organizations are not samech on this by itself. Okay? But what I'm saying is that, you have the shayla of the tuna. Okay? You have the shayla of the tuna. So since there's a couple shaylas with the tuna anyways, and nechalchai, is it not nechalchai, is it oila, is it not oila? So on top of that, you have this thing that, according to a Moshe, it's not such a problem anyway. Right? Here. Kasafti azel li baskomas moron Rav Moshe, va'achasha kasafti karati azel lefano v'amar shenichtav karoi. Rabbi Greenblatt says it is that I asked Rav Moshe Shaila, and he told me the answer. I asked him, can I write it down? He says, yes, you can write it down. I wrote it down, and then I read it back to him, and he agreed that this is what he meant. But Masa, he didn't write it. Rav Moshe finds it as 10 volumes of tshuvas. Well, all of a sudden he wasn't in the mood of writing this one. It's a little interesting.
How reliable is this person?
Oh, he's a gadol.
So he wouldn't be wrong.
I'm not saying he was lying. Chas v'shalom. That's not the point. But the point is, you want to know if Rav Moshe wrote it, he didn't write it. That's all I'm saying. So it's a bit cooler.
So you still have to go ascertain whether their process is something that you can't do at home.
Correct. You do have to ascertain it. That is 100% correct. So therefore, all I'm saying is that even though there is an interesting heter from a Moshe about these type of things, it's not so posh, and one has to be particularly careful before using that heter, which anyway, the kosher organizations don't use it freely as it is. Okay? Now,